welcome to a Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. You know, as I was at the Austin International Drag Festival, and I did not do a very good job of saying all of my thank yous while I was there, and so I'm gonna do some of them now. I met so many of my camp siblings, but I have to really give it up for the Austin International Drag Festival staff. Like, they were amazing, like, throughout the entire festival. I know that some things came out late, and I had seen some of the online drama, but the reality situation is the festival is ran by 5 people, and I think that they did an absolutely fantastic job in giving this experience to all of you. Now, I don't really know how to explain the feeling that I get from Austin, but at the end of the day, it's like magical. It's like summer camp for drag artists. It has this feeling of camaraderie, and that I've made this family and all these friends, and it's just, I don't know, it just fills my soul in the best ways possible. Like, every time that I think about Austin every year, I get so excited. I'm gonna party with my friends. I'm up for 4 days straight, and my body's like giving out, and like, because I'm just having so much fun meeting all these people and all of these entertainers. And so really, I need to thank the staff and thank my friends and thank the hotel, and like, the bars were so cool. And like, the thing is, I do have like 1,000 stories, and none of them seem impactful enough for the podcast in this exact moment, other than saying that being able to just laugh until all hours of the morning with some of the most crazy and talented people around was just a really beautiful experience for me. And I am going to bring this back, because I forgot to do this on my other episode. What I'm wearing this evening is I decided to go with a really simplistic look. I'm wearing a Big Brother t-shirt, and then also just then nothing underneath it except for just some beautiful leggings. So that's what I'm wearing this evening. But before we get into our break, let me ask you all, how are you doing this evening? Let me know in the comments. Hey everybody, you know sometimes how you get really bored on a Tuesday? Well, I have something for you. We just started up a weekly bingo show at North Bar PDX. It's located at 5008 Southeast Division Street. It starts at 7 o'clock p.m. It's hosted by Carly J. Phoenix, Autumn Rains, and Coco Gem Holiday. It is free to play for the first round for everybody. After that, we do kind of charge for the cards, just so we can get a little bit of money. And also, the bar has the coolest vibe. The bartenders are so cool, so funny, so sweet, and everything you want on an easy-to-have Tuesday. It usually runs from 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. And hey, it's bingo. Everybody should know how to play. And remember, it's 5 squares for a bingo. More information, check it out on our website at agemofasecretpodcast.com. Just click at the events section and you can see all of the events that the CDS Drag Productions has to offer.
It's a podcast. Check it out. With Coco and Donatella podcast. Check it out. Tune into What They Tell You podcast. Check it out. With Coco and Donatella podcast. Check
it out. And we're back, and I have a special guest, and I'm filming this while I'm currently at the Austin International Drag Festival. I have Coleslaw from Camp Wanakiki season 4 with us. How are you doing?
Hi. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
The facial expressions that y'all are missing out on is just fantastic. So give the kids, how long have you been doing drag?
Well, it's kind of difficult to answer, so I have to backtrack to when I first started working in the nightlife industry, which was about 12 years ago in Boston. And I wasn't doing drag per se, but I was always interested in like collecting weird clothes and dressing up. But it wasn't until, I think, 2016 that I started, to do makeup and, like, create a character. But yeah, I don't know if I said, but I started DJing 12 years ago. So I'm still DJing now, but now I just do it in drag.
Coleslaw just knocked over all of my trash that I have set up in my hotel room here. So, what got you into, let's talk about that. What got you into DJing?
It's just something I always wanted to do. I was always obsessed with collecting music and, just learning everything about pop culture. Since I was a little kid, I would make like little cassette mixtapes for my mother to listen to in her car. And then it was CD mixtapes. And then it was DJing. And I started out in like a really like doing basement parties in college. Mm-hmm. And then I just kept doing, you know, dive bars and then small queer events and then large. And now I'm doing like nightclub gigs and weddings. Really? And like, yeah, it's fun.
Is that your primary source of income?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yeah. Okay. That's cool. So how many gigs do you have in a week for DJing alone without drag?
3.
Didn't know there were so many syllables in there.
I DJ every Thursday in Boston, and I DJ at least give or take twice a week in Providence, Rhode Island.
Wow.
Unless I'm doing things like this, right? I didn't work all week, which is like a big hit in the pocket. Oh, but whatever. I'm having fun.
You would imagine that the sugar bakers would have helped us with that. Listen.
Money, shmoney. Just kidding. Oh my god.
So did DJing and drag? That's actually that's really cool because that's Nina Flowers does that, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's also actually there's a couple of Drag Race girls who do that as well. And I always find that that's like a beautiful blend because then you get creative with your mixes. It tends to the DJ drag artists tend to be more creative with their mixes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, lately, since I have, like you said, been earning my living from DJing, I haven't really been performing. So honestly, that's something that was, I was a little like in my head yesterday because after I performed in the main room, I like went back to my hotel room and I was like, why don't I have a choreographed number where every second of the song I'm doing, but it's like, you know, we compare ourselves to other people. It's just like human nature as artists, but
yeah.
But then I'm like, well, they can't do what I'm doing, so I don't know.
Well, and it's true, because when you're here, we tend to, I always say that the Austin Drag Festival, like, we're all colleagues. Like, we're all coworkers or colleagues or peers in that capacity, regardless of how long we've been doing, we're all doing drag, right? And then, like, so it's, you'll hear some people when you just remember that they either have just fans here or a lot of friends they brought, and they'd be screaming crazy. Mm-hmm. And then you go up there as somebody who maybe only brought like 6 friends or something like that. And then like not everybody's going crazy. You're just like kind of in your head. You're like, is this not mm-hmm. going well? Or is my song choice a little off?
Yeah.
And because like just for everybody, all the listeners out there. So we did our Camp Wanakiki showcase, both of them in the same day, which is rough. And the nightclub one, they started us, we were the beginning set. So like the nighttime show started at 10 p.m. and there were 3 other showcases happening at the same time. And I can tell you right now that it was dead from 10 to like 10:15. It was pretty rough, to be honest.
Yeah. And then as soon as our show was like wrapping up, of course, like hordes of people like flooded, and I'm like, okay, with money. Cool.
Yeah, I was like, this is so great. And I actually remember, kudos to you on your number. I really, really liked your number. I thought it was great.
Well, thanks.
It was good. It was really good. I enjoyed it. So let's get into, because I know all of my adoring listener want to know. let's talk about your time on the show. So let's talk about when you got the call. Did you like freak out? Were you excited? Who did you tell?
Well, it's interesting. I tried out for season 3, because that was, at that point, it was like the beginning of the quarantine. So I was like, I don't have anything else to do. Why not? So I put together, an audition, and they put me up, like, in the, I don't know what it's called, but, like, the almost picked category. What do you call that?
Actually, I know what category, because they told me about that. They're like, we have these people that are, like, potentials.
Yeah, like, potential. Yeah. And they didn't end up picking me, and I was like, whatever. But then they were like, oh, we're auditioning for season 4. And I was like, at that point, transitioning out of quarantine and into, like, working at the clubs again, and I was very overwhelmed because it was such a huge change of pace.
Oh, I bet.
So I was like, I am not doing I don't have time, I don't have the mental like energy to be doing another audition tape. And then they emailed me and were like, hey, can we use your season 3 tape? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then they were like, okay, we want you to be on it. I'm like, what?
What? I didn't even know. So what we're hearing, inside tea, everybody, what I call the behind-the-scenes tea, apparently Coleslaw didn't have to audition.
Well, I'm pretty sure a number of us, Lily was supposed to,
No, I'm going to let you suffer on this one.
I'm thinking
Lily of... St. Queer.
Yeah.
That one.
Lily St. Queer. Don't put that in. Lily St. Queer was cast on season 3 and couldn't do it for some reason. So that was that. And then it almost seems like no one really auditioned for season 4. Oh, and they were like taking the season 3. Was it Paula? I don't remember. It wasn't just me, though. I know there was a couple other ones.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, y'all's season was fantastic, don't get me wrong, but, I also noticed that the Sugar Bakers kind of changed. When we talk about the Sugar Bakers, for listeners out there, so they are, like, the owners of the franchise of Hamburger Mary's. They technically run a business. They do this as kind of a side, Camp Wanakiki is pretty much, it's a really long commercial for Hamburger Mary's is what it is. Like, it's a 4-season commercial for Hamburger Mary's. And so, they are busy all the time running a business. And so then they did this as a side project. And obviously it costs a lot of money to do the side project. And so they kind of get behind. Even this year at the Austin International Drag Festival, they were telling me, and yes, I like spreading their business online. They were telling me that they weren't going to be doing auditions this year, which I think is a little silly and foolish for when you all listen to this, you Sugar Baker twins. Because then you can't, like, it also markets the show. Really? So people can meet our fans and stuff like that, because we go to auditions as well. And people are like, what's your time like on the show? And it gives you this moment of feeling like a celebrity, too, for the campers. But they were just like, oh, it just takes so much work. It's like 3 days of blah, 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 blah. I was like, yes, hard work is what makes a successful show, twins.
Well, they made a time slot for a meet and greet for the Camp Wanakiki people. And it was pretty, I'm not going to say humiliating, but pointless.
pointless is a great word. Well, and the thing is, the meet and greet needed to be, there's two things that happen. So when you have a festival and somebody's performing, it is kind of rude to be taking pictures when somebody's performing, right?
Yes.
So the meet and greet was outside of the room.
Right.
But the problem is like, then people didn't know who was next. Mm-hmm. And so people who want to take pictures with us are usually other performers as well. And so it just didn't align. The meet and greet really does need to happen in the bigger room.
Mm-hmm.
That would make more sense. But, at least in my opinion. Okay, so...
I fully agree with you.
Yeah, so let's talk about... So, you get to camp. What was your first thoughts once you, hit campground?
You mean, meeting the campers?
Yeah, meeting the other campers.
It was exciting. I was excited to, like the anticipation, like when they finally, a couple days before, show you on the Instagrams of everyone, I'm like going through, and honestly, you can't really judge people off their Instagrams.
You really
can't, even though we do.
Yeah, yes.
But I'm like, all right, so this one does this, and then you see everyone, and they're just like, it's just like a bunch of weirdos. Like,
yeah, just, and then like the Instagram counts are just different for everybody. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that they're going to suck at drag, obviously. It just means they might not be social media people, right? And, I know that exact feeling, too. When I walked into the room, because you get to see everybody and you get to see their Instagrams beforehand, because they do let us know. It's like, I was like, oh, wow, this person's really, really campy. Or, oh, my gosh, this person has 10,000 followers and something like that. So, yeah, I totally get that feeling.
But I felt excited because I they're like just fucking weirdos like me. Like,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And immediately you see like a couple that you like click with. Yeah. And then others you don't really click with. I don't know.
Well, so let's talk about that. Who did you bond with the most during your time on the show?
Well, I feel like definitely Vincent, Paula, and Clinica, because, not even because of the cabin situation, even though I was with Paula and Vincent in our cabin. There's two cabins, okay. for those who don't know, with no privacy.
Not a lick. Not a lick.
But we made the really groundbreaking decision to start doing our makeup in the cafeteria where there was air conditioning.
Oh, smart. Yeah. Smart.
Apparently, no one had ever done that. So every morning at the ass crack of dawn, we would march over to the cafeteria, the four of us, and get ready there. And we'd just be like, mm-hmm. you know, talking, getting to know each other, right. making jokes, giving each other tips, sharing makeup products. And,
oh, that's so kind.
Yeah. And I kept telling everyone else, I'm like, you guys should come get ready with us. It's mm-hmm. air conditioned. Because right. it was hot as hell.
Was it? Okay.
And they were like, no, we're good in the cabin. And I'm like, okay. Red flag.
That's a red flag, honestly. Well, because the other thing, too, think about it, because you're having to wake up so early. I get that those precious moments of sleep are important. I get that. But also, at the same time, camaraderie is also important. Because you do still yeah. recognize that. You like Camp Wanakiki is also a place that you bring what you bring.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can sometimes like run out and get you a couple of things. Like say something just ripped in half, they can kind of help you with that. But like it's not there's not downtime. There's not extra time. So it's like what you brought is what you brought. So mm-hmm. like having other people having the ability to help you helps out a lot. So that's cool that you
yeah
all did
definitely.
That.
And I feel like our cast was very close knit. And. If you saw someone that was struggling, I can't really say specific times, but we definitely were like passing like hairspray and like concealer and glitter and stuff, because we wanted to look, you know, as good as we could.
Yeah, just because it's gonna be filmed and it's gonna mm-hmm. be on. So every camper that I've had on this show, I've kind of asked these questions in the realm of, so DDF stands for your daily drag face. Yeah. Yes. Everybody has always tried to figure it out, especially for my new listeners who, since we restarted the podcast, who've been listening to this. It's not like the shots are all filmed with our DDF. They have you take it off and put it back on every single day, or if they have to do reshoots, you have to put it back on. So, how did you come up with your DDF?
I wanted it to be bright and like. Easy, like colorful yeah. and easy, but also be very me. So I did this thing where I shaved half of the side of my head because I knew my hair was going to be pulled back, so that way I could extend my like face like
okay.
horizontally.
Jeez.
I look back and I'm like, damn, I was painted. because the days were long, it was hot. I don't know how I did it, but that shit was not cracking.
Yeah. I was actually asking Flapjack about that because I think that Flapjack, actually they told me that body that they had on the show is their body. I don't know if they're lying, but they said that they just wore a corset the whole time.
I don't know. Yeah, well, I don't know if that's true.
Well, it just kills me because Flapjack wore pants. And I was like, oh my, because a lot of us do the skirt or moo-moo-y mm-hmm. thing. Because for those of you out there, yes, we're drag artists, and like everything underneath is usually some sort of false or some elevation, and I get it. And it's tiring, and you're doing all these activities mm-hmm. in public, and so like it's like you want to be as comfortable as humanly yeah. possible while you're doing like a high ropes course. And so a lot of us do that. So when I met Flapjack, I was like, you wore pants.
Yeah. I remember they filmed on one of the last days, like, what's something you'd give advice for season 5? And I remember I was like, if you have penis genitals, do not wear shorts or pants. Because wear a skirt. Because the whole process, like, if you have to go to the bathroom, is just so annoying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because mine, I was one of the skirt girls.
Yeah.
And I actually had leggings with my DDF as well.
Like, I had to take everything off.
Yeah. And I was just like, I needed something that made me feel... not super fat, something that can give me a little shape.
Mm-hmm.
So skirt is super easy, obviously. And the leggings to where I didn't have to shave my legs.
Yeah.
Like, as I'm running around in the wilderness. And then I just found some cheap shoes from Target, I think, is what I found.
My little jumper thing is from Rainbow. Yeah. Because I knew I wanted something that was, like, cute and, like, light. And I saw it, and it was plus size, and I was like, this is what I'm wearing.
Yes.
I put that shapewear to... By the end of it, the boning was, like, just the shape of a C. It was, like, completely curved and, like, stabbing my ribs.
Oh, my gosh. This is the high life of of TV stars. Mm-hmm. So did you bring extra copies of your DDF?
Oh, and I also had, like, they're called chub rub shorts for chafing, but the pink, like, half leggings were torn in the thighs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I brought two... So, also, I cut my Wankiki t-shirt up, because I was like, I'm not wearing a fucking t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, I cut it up, and it was, like, falling apart. I'm like, I don't even care. Yes. I just, like, tied it really tight in the back.
Oh, that makes more sense. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of the campers from my season have used their Camp Wankiki shirts and numbers where they destroy them. Not saying there's anything wrong with the franchise, God. But just that just they've destroyed them. So, I remember even last year at AIDF... they wanted Vivian Veneta St. Clair wanted to film something with them, and they were like, I don't have any more camp shirts. And they were like, why? And they're just like, no reason. It was just so great. Cause I have both of mine still. I don't know why I have them, but cause I actually only had one copy of my DDF. And one thing I've shared on this podcast is I actually, cause I made it. And, on the very last day of filming, it caught on fire.
Oh my God.
Yeah, my dress caught on fire. And so, like,
the campfire?
Yeah. Like, a spark popped.
Holy
and
shit.
It hit the dress, and I got set on fire. And we put it out. And then I just remember this will always be a traumatic experience, Sugar Bakers. They were like, keep filming. Keep filming. And the rest of the campers are like trying to put it out. And then, like, they're like, all right, let's continue the scene. And I was just like, so dejected because it was just a big old burn mark in the middle of my dress.
Where at?
it's just like this on the side here.
God.
So for filming for the rest of it, I just kept turning it to where it was out of camera view because it was such a large hole. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you bring up the campfires because one of our challenges was we had to start a fire, which I won and did not get any
credit for.
Whatever. Anyways, oh my God. So Deja Della Toro had this like ponytail things, and it was basically like a wig on each side of her head.
Oh, boy.
And they were like probably down to her waist. So she pulls off her wig and they're like, Deja, why is your wig off? She's like, I'm not trying to catch my head on fire. It was like, there were so many things that weren't like thought out production wise. There was no safety person on set, like in case like someone did catch on fire.
Oh, wow.
Like, and we brought that up to the production people and they're like, well, the boom, I forget his name, but the person who's like the camera assistant who's like holding the boom, he's trained in like, CPR and like stuff like that.
Wow.
And we're like, yeah, but he's holding the boom mic.
he's not gonna be able to drop it and help us because you all will want to film it while we're dying. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. What was your favorite challenge from your season?
The stand-up challenge was something that for those who didn't watch, but also there was a challenge where we had to perform stand-up live in front of an audience. I had never done that. I mean, I'd hosted, like, a million shows, but it's not the same. Because when you're doing stand-up, you're telling personal things and making them funny and trying to relate with the audience. You know, you've all seen the stand-up comedy things.
Right.
And I'd never really made, like, an original set like that.
Yeah.
I was so nervous.
Really?
So nervous.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I thought of all my jokes, like, while I was sleeping, and I woke up and put them in my phone. So I boiled it down to, like, I was timing myself, and I would always go over. But I'm like, I don't know. I ended up going over, like, 6 minutes, and we were supposed to only do 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So when they edited it down onto the show, I felt like they took all of my good jokes out
for
the process of making me look like I didn't do good.
Oh.
I'm not dumb.
Actually, you know what? I was kind of wondering about that. Like, because Yes, I will say, yes, don't always blame it on the edit for the things that you say, but also keep in mind there's a lot more that they take out because how long were your filming days?
Oh, roughly? My God. How long?
Yeah.
All day. Like 15 hours maybe. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, and they condense that. Think about it. They condense that into 45-minute to an hour episodes when you're filming for 15 hours. Like, so of course they cut out stuff. And sometimes it's stuff that's really funny or stuff that's really good.
Because it's like, you know, humor is subjective, so maybe the people that are editing are like, this isn't funny, but it, like, actually is.
Yeah.
But I sidetracked. The stand-up challenge was my favorite just because it was, like, such a cool opportunity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the audience was great, but that was a really dramatic episode because it was a double elimination.
Sure.
So it was, like, really stressful. Like, oof, people were crying and shit.
Did you cry on set at all?
I wept like a child when I was eliminated. I, like, ran away from everyone. I like, went through all of, like, the stages of denial.
Oh, wow.
It was, like, shock, and then it was, like, anger, and then it was, like, it was kind of like, all right, everything's fine. And then I just ran away and called my partner, and I was just, like, weeping on the phone. Oh. I just usually, like, get it out, you know?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it sucked. And then the next day, I was all like,
Oh, of course, just pissed at everyone. You're just like, fine, whatever. And then, like, well, so with your season, did you... and I've already disillusioned people to this. I know that they, when the campers take a hike, they don't actually leave. They can't leave. Yeah. They're at a remote camp. So they just kind of stay there. And so did you get to sleep in the next day then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, I woke up at 4 p.m. Like, you're like, ready to go.
I wanted nothing to do with anything. But then you kind of, you know, you like swallow your pride and you're like, all right, am I going to be a little baby? Or am I going to, like, you know, get it together and just
make it happen.
There's only a few days left.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That does.
But it's weird because I didn't, like, necessarily think I was going to win. I didn't go into it like, oh, I'm going to win this. And especially after seeing, like, how creative everyone was, I knew I would do well. But I, you know, it's just like, I guess I got a little carried away.
That's true. It makes sense. But you did well, though.
Yeah.
You did really well. You're in a lot of episodes, and that's what matters.
I think it's Hillary and Clinica won every episode, except for I won the Scary Story one. I could be wrong. I think Deja might have won something.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. But it was very, very, like, Hillary and Clinica-centric.
Right, right.
Which was a lot.
Which was a lot.
It was a lot.
It's so interesting what, because when you think about it, the Sugar Bakers, and actually I'll just kind of disillusion the crowd to this too. Some behind the scenes tea is that it's not just the Sugar Bakers and Ruthie who actually decide who's staying and who's going. It's actually the entire production team who decides who's staying and who's going. They talk about the looks and how well people are doing and blah, 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 blah. And so that's kind of how they make their decisions. And so it does kind of suck. Like, so even at the festival, Xenon was like, oh yeah, Coco's the one who sent me home. The thing is, it's really beautiful about this series versus, you know, Drag Race is, like, there's not a lip sync for your life. The Sugar Bakers and Ruthie are deciding, well, at least what it looks like to the public, the Sugar Bakers and Ruthie decide who stays and who goes. So, like, other campers do not send other campers home, which is nice because it doesn't build contention or technically resentment. But
yeah, but it sucks because there's no chance to, like, redeem yourself. It's, oh, like, yeah. Incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, because you're just like, well, I just didn't know. There's a lot of misinformation, I think, that goes into what, like, a reality TV show actually is. I always tell people that the one thing that's also kind of interesting, which has probably happened on your season a lot, is the Sugar Bakers have to repeat scenes constantly.
Do they watch this?
Oh, do they listen to this?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they do.
Because you're talking mad shit.
I do. But it's actually, it's all honesty, though. I like to tell people, like, they do mess up their lines, but we're all human, right? But when you think about it, I love to bring it up in the sense of, like, American Idol or America's Got Talent. the reason, like, those hosts don't ever mess up, and I bet that they do mess up, and they have to refilm yeah. those scenes. Like, it is reality TV, but reality TV means the hosts are perfect, and we have to just look like fools. So, I mean, that's how reality TV yeah. works. So, the only reason I was bringing all that up is, do you, there is a point to all that madness. Do you think that your edit that you got showed you in a light that you wanted to be represented?
Yeah, except for the comedy one. I'm like, I would give anything to see the whole set just because I want to, like, see it as I remember it, just because, like, I made, oh my god, I have this running thing with my local, the Boston people know, I always love to harp on Christina Aguilera screaming, sure. which is what I did last night, one of the mixes, in the Austin show, but I made, like, a joke about it, and then I, like, belted like a long note mm-hmm. and everyone was like freaking out and I just want to, like, you know, maybe I'm remembering it and it wasn't funny in real life.
Oh yeah.
I just want to see it just for, like,
just for clarity. Yeah, that's a good idea. So when the Sugar Bakers inevitably lost his Sugar Bakers release, everybody's full stand-up sets. Yeah. Everybody's full stand-up sets on YouTube is, like, on the Camp Wanakiki page.
I'm sure if I was extremely persistent about it, they would. Maybe I should try harder.
You should try. I would love to see everybody's full stand-ups. I mean, Drag Race does that when they do stand-up comedy challenges. If you yeah. want to watch the full things, go to the website, and I think that that would be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, and then the Drag Race is so shady. They'll, like, the people that aren't, you know, necessarily a comedic person, they'll, like, show all the audience people being bored and looking at their watches and shit.
It's so rude. It's like
fucking rude.
And you know that's B-roll too. And I swear, like, I tell people this too about reality TV. They tell you to do reactions. They're like, hey, we need a couple of different reactions for everybody.
One other thing from behind the scenes of that comedy challenge, they interviewed all of the audience members and asked them who their favorite of the night was. And they never put it in the episode, which makes me think that the people that the person that won for the audience vote,
yeah,
they didn't agree with.
Oh, yeah. See, that you can definitely blame mm-hmm. on the edit. See, that's what makes sense. Okay, so moving away from Camp Wanakiki for a second, because mm-hmm. good heavens, we spent enough time on that. This is why twins hate me. So let's talk about drag and what that means to you a little bit more. So since this is going to be kind of one of our first episodes released when everything's happening in the world about the whole drag is not a crime thing, do you have any, like, words you want to say on that or any stories you want to share in relation to that?
Yeah, I when that whole, that week that news, like, was dropped, that the what do you call it, the law was actually passed. Is it a yeah. law?
Yes, I think.
Bill?
Bill. Law. Only a bill.
Yes. Whatever. I just don't want to sound like an idiot.
Sure. No, you're fine.
Whenever the news was passed that drag ban is actually happening, yeah. I was in a really dark place because it just made me think of, for a number of reasons, but personally, it sent me back to, like, the quarantine where it's like, you're out of work. Like, if you do what I do, you're unemployed. Right. And it just sucks. It's like, that's my life. But, like,
right, because you are in two different forms of entertainment.
Yeah.
And you're like, crap, what the hell?
I've been working at bars and clubs my entire adult life. It's just like, ugh, it's so frustrating. And it's, and then, but outside of myself, it's clearly rooted in transphobia. Like, come on. The way that they word the bill is, like, basically saying anyone who's wearing clothing or trying to look like something that they're not. What? How do they even say it? It's so vague.
It's insanely vague. And then they also are trying to make it to where it is transphobic, but then they're also trying to make it where queer people, because queer people mostly do drag, mm-hmm. right? They're trying to make it to where we're sexual predators again. Like, it's like throwing us back to the 60s, right? Like, they're like, well, drag is sexual, right? Drag is sexual. It's inherently sexual, is what they're trying to say. And then, you know, like, and we're corrupting children. We're going to make them queer as well. And it's really uncomfortable. And then they talk about our clothing and, like, all that other stuff. Then that gets rooted in the transphobia pieces of it. And, you know, the bathroom stuff and, like, all this other crap. Like, it's so, it just, they figured out, I said this before, actually, I've never said this on the podcast, though. they started attacking drag artists because they weren't winning attacking trans people. Because for some reason, it's like they couldn't figure out that trans people also do drag. But then they also didn't realize that drag queens are at the forefront of almost every single movement. Mm-hmm. So they attacked the wrong group of people because drag artists are like, oh, absolutely not. And we have a lot of trans people don't have large platforms. Every drag artist has a platform. Mm-hmm. Every single one has a platform. So, like, attacking that group of people was stupid. Like, we just went to a drag brunch. We just got back from a drag brunch, Coleslaw and I. And, like, they ended with a thing about drag is not a crime. And, like, they did this whole stuff. And then they talked about bills in Texas against trans people. And, like, so it's like, you energized more drag people to be engaged, and we have large platforms. So, like, that was so stupid. It just was stupid.
Yeah, didn't the a judge, like, turn down last second? So it's not actually happening yet?
Correct.
But then I also heard yesterday during the festival, something's happening in Florida.
Yeah, some stuff is happening in Florida where there's, like, bands going into place. Tor Hyman, who is the winner of season 2 of Camp Wanakiki, has lost, I don't want to misquote the number, but, like, I think 4 or 5 shows.
It's unreal. Yeah. It's so fucked up.
And they're a full-time drag artist as well. Yeah. And that is just, like, I really want straight people, because there's a lot of straight people listening to this podcast, like, just recognizing that, like, that's literally just waking up one day, and whatever your profession is, they just, which isn't harmful, because drag is not harmful. They're just like, we can't do this anymore. Like, you could be a cashier at Walmart trying to feed your kids, and they're just like, this isn't acceptable anymore, so you're fired. And you're like, what am I going to do to feed myself and keep doing? They're like, no, I don't care, I think this is inappropriate.
In regards to the, like, the children thing, I know a lot of local people in Boston do the drag queen story hour. I'm not doing that shit. I can't not say fuck or, like, rub my nipples while I'm in drag. Like, but, like, if you're into that and if you're into, like, the whole innocent, like, I want to teach and educate children and show them that there are different types of people.
Yeah.
I think it's healthy for kids, but I don't have a kid, so I guess my opinion doesn't matter. But, it's basically like saying you want to ban movies. There's movies for kids, there's movies for adults. You can't say that all drag is, like, bad for kids. It makes no sense. And yes, there are, I'm sure, queer pedophiles, but there are also straight pedophiles. It does not, you can't say just because one person does this evil thing that we're all doing it. Like, it's just so strange.
Right, and the thing about drag, too, is, which people don't also realize, for all of our straight listeners out here right now, is, keep this in mind. We hold our own community to a higher standard than we hold you all to. Like, usually when there is, like, a predator or a rapist or something like that in the drag community, we call that person out and we pull them away so aggressively.
They're outed.
They're so out. They are outed completely. And, like, it's so interesting that people think that we wouldn't hold our own community accountable to the people who are bad apples. It's literally what we kind of talk about for police officers. We would really, like, people say ACAB because they want other police officers to hold the bad apples accountable, and it's not happening. Drag artists hold the bad ones accountable in the most aggressive way possible. So, and here's the thing, too, about the kids being exposed at an early age. Like, there are different ways for, like, I feel like just opening up a kid's mind to just playing dress-up is not a bad thing, because drag is playing dress-up. And, like, I think that that's not inherently evil, and exposing kids to queer people means we'll have a generation of more accepting people.
What about Halloween?
Yeah, they play dress-up on Halloween. And most drag artists start on Halloween. So I guess we have to outlaw Halloween now. Cool. So, what exists for your drag in the next 5 years?
My knee is bleeding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I hurt myself last night jumping off the stage.
Did you really?
Both of my knees are, like, injured. Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's just, like, bleeding right now.
Oh, wow.
What did you ask me?
I said, what exists for your drag in the next 5 years?
So I just relocated this past August from Boston to Providence. And while it's not that far, like, it's an hour drive, it did feel like a complete reset to me with finally having a nice space. I have a big apartment with my partner, Severity. And I have a great job at the stable, DJing, and still working in Boston. So right now I'm like, I want to make like a splash in Providence. So I'm doing, wow, I'm really good at talking. During the quarantine, I did online shows, and one of them was called Time Warp, and I want to do it live. So basically, it was like we'd pick a year, and then everyone did a number based off of like a film, an album, or like a TV show or pop culture thing that happened. And then I spliced it in with like actual commercials and like things, talk show stuff.
I love that.
So it's like almost like a film. Like it just doesn't stop in between everything. Yeah, so I'm finally doing it live in the beginning of June. So I'm excited to start producing things again. And I don't know. I just want to keep busy. I find myself, I get like really in a dark place if I'm stagnant for too long.
Yeah.
And I feel like this past winter, I got kind of there. Yeah. I was in this new apartment, but it was kind of like I wasn't really being that creative, so.
Oh, sure. Why do you think that that was?
I think I was still kind of getting adjusted. I didn't want to, like, move to Providence and right away be like, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I wanted to kind of get to know the scene. And they're all so lovely. Blood everywhere.
Oh my gosh, you're just like
I'm
bleeding
just
miserably. No. You wanted to.
I mean, in terms of the dark place, I do. I got the depressions and the anxieties, and it's like a constant struggle for me. So
sounds like multiple.
I'm just a little too honest about it.
So tell me, now that you brought it up, what is your drag scene like?
You know what's cool? The drag scene is cool. But other than that, when I was coming up, it's something I've noticed recently. When I was coming up, it was very like drag queens. And that was it. It was almost like back then, it was almost like there wasn't a distinction between trans and drag queens. Just from like, I don't know if. I mean, back then they used to say the T word too, so.
Right, right.
But I'm just really happy with how far everyone's awarenesses of different identities has evolved. Because now it's like there's kings and there's things, and.
Right.
It's just really, it's a beautiful thing to see the scene flourishing into this diverse spectrum of performance artists.
Right.
And it's not just in New England, it's everywhere, apparently, because I just saw a lot, an eyeful here at the Austin Drag Festival. I guess it's nationwide.
Yeah, well, and the busiest night at the festival was actually King Fest.
It was
for the nighttime show.
Oh my God,
I wish
I had it in me mentally to stay the whole time, but I just had to leave early because I was overwhelmed.
I was so, oh my gosh, I was so claustrophobic in that space.
Yeah. It was so incredible.
It was really good. And everybody...
I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Yeah, the kings... I will say this, and this is probably a problematic thing to say. I think that kings know their words better.
They do.
They just tend to seem to know their words better than queens do. And I think it's because, like, you'll see a queen come out there in a headdress and the thing and the bells and the jewels and the type tick, 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 all that other stuff. And I feel like queens are just really... concerned about the outfit in a way that I think that kings are concerned about their outfit, but they're concerned about a great performance.
I mean, it's a generalization, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. It's super generalization, but I do actually, because I watch a lot of drag, and I do think that drag kings seem to know their words a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Or at least the way that they act that they do.
Well, I think that stems from what a lot of the hosts were saying is that drag kings are not booked as much, and it's important to include them in your shows because they do turn it out. Like
they do.
They put on, like, you know, performances thought out, and they know their words, and they're on time, and et cetera, et cetera.
They know their words, and they're on time, and they're professional. And I feel like kings, like, all kings have, like, this private group chat that says, hey, y'all, when we go into these spaces.
No, they literally do. I swear to God. Travis T. from Boston told me that there is... a drag king, I think it's a Facebook group, with, like, hundreds of people.
What?
Yes!
Oh my gosh.
I swear to God!
So they figured out how to network?
I know! And then meanwhile, the queens just want to kill each other.
Constantly. They hate each other. It's like, and then even the queens are like so invested into the kings so much because they just perform so damn well. And like, they do. That was an insane show.
Well, the reason I brought that up, the whole like evolution of drag, is because I'm really proud of Boston for how far it's come, and it's to the point now where, like, I'm an elder in the scene.
Oh, wow.
And there's a whole new generation that I don't even know. There's so many drag performers. It's like, I can't even keep up.
Yeah. I know how you feel. We're calling it... Sorry, they don't have a name yet. So there was the COVID queens.
Oh, yeah.
There was the COVID queens, right, who were...
Coronials.
Coronials? That's good. And then there is this
other... I heard a rumor that's what the generation is going to be called.
Oh my gosh. That's so stupid. So there is this generation of artists that are after COVID too,
mm-hmm.
who were like, they kind of did makeup during COVID, but not really. And they're just now breaking into the scene. And those are wild people. And I will say this, because I've had a couple of them in my own community. They come out the gate looking for that booking fee. I mean...
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, oh, yeah, like, I need to be booked to be here. I was like, you've been performing in drag for 13 seconds. I didn't even see you during COVID. Who are you, new person on scene?
I'm not trying to sound like an old person, but I do feel like that's a generational entitlement thing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds so stupid saying this because I used to hate when people said this to me, but like back in my day,
back in my day doing drag,
you had to come out and do all these open shows and like put yourself out there and mm-hmm. meet all these people. Hi, I'm Kosla.
Mm-hmm.
And get people to follow you.
Yes.
So then when we had these open competitions and you'd win by applause, mm-hmm. that's how you get your name out there. And now it's kind of like, you can just be really pretty on Instagram and get, like, thousands of likes, and then you go into the club, and it's like, I need to get booked.
Yeah, and it does...
It's really strange.
It is really strange. And actually, Ursula Major brought up a good point about... Because I do agree, even though I made that comment, that, like, everybody should get paid for doing art. However, Ursula Major made this great point that says, everybody should get paid for doing their art, but, like, in any other career... The longer you've been working at it, you tend to make more.
Yeah.
So why should Susie Homemaker, who just started doing drag yesterday, get paid the same exact booking fee as I've been doing after having a platform, being on a show, and being in drag, like doing drag for X number of years? Like, see, she was like, that's the part that's a little funny. And I think I really agree with that. I think I'm going to adopt that mentality a little bit. And I know it sounds weird to like, say you're going to change up a booking structure and pay certain people more and certain people like a base, mm-hmm. but it does kind of make sense. Like in any career in the world,
yeah.
the longer you're at it, the more you work at it, you tend to get more raises, more promotions, more annual increases.
So. I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. We did try something new at my weekly gig with Violencia in mm-hmm. Boston. And we have an open show, and Violencia takes care of the bookings. We have like a Google Form. You fill out your name, and then Violencia will pick like 10 people a week. And then they'll take $100 from the door and split it 10 ways. And on top of that, I know it's like $10, but I don't know. On top of that, they will pull all the tips that everyone performs and split it. And mm-hmm. they always end up making like $50-ish, which is like not bad.
Yeah.
If you're just starting. And people are really into it.
That's really great.
The young people. And it's bringing fresh faces out. It's bringing more queer weirdo people out, which I'm like obsessed with.
Yes. Queer weirdos are great people.
Yeah, it's like... Yes, white twinks, we know you're here, but I also like to see other spectrums of
people. Lots of different other labels that we could put out there. Good heavens. Yeah, I bland drag is great, and even white twinks can be so great, but it's so great to see different body types, races, ethnicities, nationalities, abilities and everything just across the spectrum. It just really is, it makes for such a cool show.
The new generation of drag is very exciting to me, other than a couple things like the entitlement issues, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I never acted like that when I was like 20, 22.
No, I didn't. When I started like, drag,
I did it because I wanted to. I did it because it was fun. I would go to drag just to like fuck with people and like look like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know?
And I did it because I wanted to. It was taboo and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go out, like, you remember going out with like all the girls on Saturday, and we would all get dressed up and we'd go to the bar and drink like idiots and hit on everything that moved. And mm-hmm. like, and it was just fun. And most of us looked like boogers, obviously, for the first few months we did it.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Not all the queens.
It popped out like the womb.
They literally do. It is insane. I'm like, who is that?
Who is that?
They're like, it's my first time performing. I'm like, what the fuck?
And I started drag before they really had, there was one, I think it was like Manila Luzon, I think, had a makeup tutorial on YouTube when I started. Mm-hmm. I think that was like kind of it, unless you dug deep, and that was it. And that's, you just had to learn from other queens, and they were always so mean about it in good ways.
Yep.
They were like, you look like trash.
Yep.
Fix your face. And we're like, okay, cool. And like, you just kept fixing your face until finally you were just,
you can't,
like,
say that anymore.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell someone to fix their face.
You cannot.
You would get so canceled. Fix your face. Be like, what'd you say to me? Be like, oh, I'm so sorry. You canceled on the internet.
So my partner, Severity Stone, started, it's funny actually, we met when I started DJing. So been doing drag for 12 years since I started DJing. Yeah, it's really interesting actually, but when I started finally being interested in makeup, I would beg them, please show me how you do it. I don't understand. I thought that like baby powder was like, was like white pigment.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Like, that's how like much I didn't know.
Oh, wow.
And Severity refused, and I would always get so annoyed. But looking back, that's probably one of the best things that they could have done for me, because it really forced me to pave my own way and figure it out. Yeah. Mind you, that wasn't their intention. They were just being like a little bitch, but...
Yeah, fair. Oh, absolutely fair. Absolutely fair. Do you have any drag kids?
No.
No, absolutely not.
I was talking to someone in the limo about that.
Sounds really ritzy, that phrase. I was talking to somebody in the limo.
It wasn't glamorous at all. Yes, we had a limo for a shuttle bus for some reason, and it was really interesting. It was fun.
Yeah.
I don't have any children. I've had a couple people ask me, and I've said no, because if I were to do that, I feel like I'd want to take it seriously and, like, actually, like, you know, get Ubers for them or buy them wigs and shit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just say it just so, like, they could have my name.
Right.
Like, I don't think of myself like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe in a little bit.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I do see, like, young ones sometimes, and I'm like, I really see something in you. Like, you're going to be a star. So, maybe it's going to happen soon. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. So, as we get to the end of our interview here, can you tell the kids all your socials?
Yeah. So, my Instagram is Creamy Dreamy Coleslaw. Creamy Dreamy Coleslaw. Creamy Dreamy Coleslaw.
Oh, my God.
It used to be Coleslaw in the Corner, but then... the internet stole it from me. I got hacked.
Oh, no.
Yes. Let this be a warning for everyone listening. If anyone random, like, messaged you and said, hey, can you help me with something? Don't help them.
Just at anyone.
Because I'm so gullible, and I was like, yeah, sure, what do you need? They're like, all right, this is what it said. I'm in this contest, and I need people to vote for me. Click this link, and can you vote for me? And it didn't say... It was from someone I knew also, so therefore their account had been stolen, so they were tricking me with it. It's like a chain thing.
Yeah.
And I clicked it. 2 seconds later, I was locked out of the account. They changed the passwords, they changed emails, everything.
Wow.
It was gone.
Wow.
Like, in like a split second.
Dang.
So, be careful on social media. Don't trust people.
Yeah, my boy job is working in IT, and I don't click on anything. People think I'm so rude. They're like, so you're not gonna... get back at me. I was like, oh, I don't click on things.
Yeah.
That's not a thing that I do.
Seriously.
That's why when people send me TikTok videos, I'm so hesitant.
It looks like so suspicious.
It looks so suspicious. Just tag me on TikTok.
Mm.
Like, it's fine. So I'm going to get to my final question that I ask everybody.
Yeah.
So from your season 4 camp siblings. Mm-hmm. If you were to get into a bar fight and you had to choose two of your siblings to help you win the fight, who would you choose and why?
Well, I was warned about this question, so I have this answer ready. I would pick Paula Frost and Coco Chanel because we are the three quarterbacks of season four. We are all very large, 6 foot plus, wide shoulder.
Linebackers.
Yeah. I always thought that I was like a ballerina born into a quarterback's body.
Aw, how yeah, dainty.
I know, isn't it precious? Mm-hmm. but yeah, Coco and Paula, I love those two people.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Do you have anything that you want to promote or tell the kids?
No, follow my Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't have a podcast. It's actually interesting. I did record three-hour sessions of me and my friend because I thought I was going to do a podcast when mm-hmm. when the cast was announced. Mm-hmm. I just got lazy.
It takes some work, as you see.
I told my friend JP, I was like, if I ever die mysteriously, use this as my like goodbye.
Oh my gosh.
It's like all my background and shit.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, goodness. Okay, so listeners, this has been a Gem of a Secret podcast. Thank you so much to Coleslaw in the Corner. Trauma. Thank you so much to Coleslaw for being on here. I'll have their picture and all their social media listed on our website at agemofasecretpodcast.com. Thank you so much.
I hope I didn't say anything controversial.
I'm not editing anything out.
All right,
bye.
I'm sorry, Lily.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.